to the Industry.Fashion's In Conversation podcast, where we invite you to tune into the stories of some of fashion's most inspirational leaders. From the history of their careers to the current priorities for their businesses and advice for their fellow fashion friends, these conversations cover it all. The In Conversation series is staged in proud partnership with Klarna. After leaving school at 18, Simon Brown travelled the world before returning to the UK to establish fashion retailer Jo Browns. The carefree spirit of Jo Browns' clothing range is a perfect representation of Simon himself. Launching originally as a mail order business in 1998, Jo Browns has grown to become a Yorkshire fashion giant. The company now operates online, has several partnerships with prominent retailers, has retail units near its headquarters in Leeds, and still takes mail orders today. Simon tells me, Tom Shearsmith, news editor and senior writer, about how his early travelling influenced his career, the importance of growing and adapting with the consumer, the company's expansion into homeware and loungewear, why the whole business is about making people feel good, and how the business plans to reach an annual revenue of 100 million by 2026. So Simon, welcome to the podcast. We've got a lot to talk about, not only about your life, but about the Jo Browns business as well. Before I talk about anything Jo Browns, I'd really like to sort of get a feel about you. Tell me about your life. Tell me about your career.
Okay. Well, first of all, Tom, thanks very much for inviting me. I'm really happy to be just having a bit of an informal chit chat with you. So thank you very much. So my life, well, it started 62 years ago, to be honest. But I think for me, I left school with no qualifications, and all I wanted to do was travel. So I worked in a factory, saved up £800, got a one-way ticket to New York, and then went off around the world working illegally wherever I could get work, and ended up actually in New Zealand. But I worked in some fabulous places in Hawaii and California. I just had a great time. I was 19 years old and not a care in the world. There were no phones. I don't even think the fax machine had been invented at that time. So there was no way of communicating with my family. And it was difficult for them, but it was pretty perfect for me. And also, it was before the days of all those Insta phones and taking photos and everything. So you could just get on and live in the moment, which is what I like to do, really. So it suited me fine. And then my father had a clothing business, two factories making clothes, and he was finding it particularly difficult. And him and my mother both said it was about time I came home. I had a ticket to Australia, as it happens, but I came home after 18 months, and he gave me a suitcase full of donkey jackets and a suitcase full of incontinent trousers, and said, "Go and sell the donkey jackets to the dockers and the miners, and go and sell the incontinent trousers to all the health authorities." So I did this for a couple of months, but it just wasn't my bag. So I said to him, "Look, I can't do this," and it wasn't really fair to ask me to come back from New Zealand to do this. So he said, "Well, we've got 250 machinists who need work, so whatever you can find to stitch together, go and do that." So I started designing is the wrong word. I started buying samples from shops and then buying garments from shops, making samples, and going to see the markets, selling to the markets in Leeds, Wakefield and Sheffield. And that sort of, it did pretty well. I was working with some really sharp guys down on the market. And I knew I had to sharpen up a bit myself. So I started buying books. My favorite was Gary Karras, Negotiate to Close. So when these guys were getting the better of me, I could refer to chapter 2 or chapter 6 or 7 in my mind and test these principles out on them. And I tell you, they worked a treat. So I was loving it. And then we produced some stripy boating blazers. We used to make skinhead coats, you know, with the red linings, Crombie coats with a little red pocket, stay pressed trousers. It was all men's fashion. And I bought a lot of stripy boating blazer fabric from a mill that had just gone bust, and put our phone number in the back of the label and just the name, Browns. And before I knew it, these were all over Leeds, Wakefield, Sheffield market. I got a phone call from a top man buyer wanting to know if we could make some for him. So we started supplying top man. And then I got a phone call from Cecil G, wanting to know if we could do some strappy trousers for them. So that wasn't a problem. So we did that, and then we just filled in the gaps, and we dealt with everybody you could deal with on the high street, to be honest, apart from Marks and Spencer. And our two factories expanded a bit. I think we had about 350 machinists, and then we had five factories making for us in the end. But so that was it in a very quick.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ups and downs along the way.
Yeah. Did you ever make it to Australia?
Well, actually, only with my wife and my daughter. My daughter was 9 months old, we decided to go. I don't know why, but we decided to go and have a look around Australia. So I went back for 3 weeks. So yes, I did. Thank you. Yes. Yeah.
So how did you get from essentially where you were, which was doing sort of run-of-the-mill jobs here and there for the companies that ask you, to founding the Joe Brown's business?
Well, we used to actually design all the product for these big store groups. So everybody you could mention, BHS, C&A, Topman, River Island, Jigsaw, all of them really, Next. I just got tired of it. And one day I'm coming up from London. It was about 10:30 at night. I had to travel down from Leeds to London with a bag of a rail of samples nearly every week. And it's 10:30 at night. I get out at Leicester Forest East. It's pouring it down. Go and get a burger. And I'd had a particularly bad day with Topman and River Island and Jigsaw, actually. They'd been just kicking my ass around, wanting discounts because we were running a bit late on delivery. And I thought, I wasn't put on this planet to do this anymore. So I'd done it for 17 years, and we'd had a load of fun, I have to say. We'd had a load of fun. But the buyers had all changed. Before, I was younger. They were younger. We were all pals. And the rag trade was a great trade to be in those days. But they brought in a lot of younger people with university qualifications who all of a sudden were put in a semi-powerful position, and they were just making my life miserable. So at that time, I thought, it's time I did something else. So we were on holiday in Wales in Morfyn-Effyn, and there's a pub called the Teacock Pub. And it had been a lovely hot day. About 5 or 6 o'clock, we went for a few beers. And I saw this group of 20-somethings in the corner. They had salty hair, bangles, cut-off shorts. They were a really cool lot. And I looked at them, and they were just exuding this happiness and this freedom and not a care in the world. And I looked at them, and I thought, that's what I need to do. I need to bottle up that feeling that they're exuding, and I need to bottle up the essence of that and transmit it somehow. And I came back from that little holiday, went into my office at home, and wrote down all the things I was good at and bad at, and all the things I loved doing and hated doing. Like, I hated driving to London and getting my ass kicked every week. And then I came out, it was about a weekend, I came out of my office, and I said to my wife, I think we should have a mail order business, because it ticked all the boxes for me. This was just, it was before the internet, but mail order is visually stimulating, and I love adverts. I still love looking at adverts in magazines. So it had everything, and it had the clothing. I knew a little bit about clothing and how it was made. So it seemed like the perfect thing. So we set up Joe Brown's, but it was strange. It was just a men's business, and it was all the things in the catalogue that I liked doing. So there was parachuting days, whitewater rafting, bungee jumping days. And also I had this mad idea. I love motorbikes. So we were selling fast bikes, imports. We're selling them about 1,500 quid more than you buy them in a dealership. But and we sold 7 or 8, but you know, the insurance, we then had to look into it properly, and I couldn't get the insurance to be selling these fast bikes. So the business then really struggled, and I had to go find an investor, which is another whole story.
Yeah. Well, if you were to put it in a nutshell, I mean, you kind of already described that it's happiness, but how would you describe what the Joe Brown's brand is now?
Oh, it's it's just a bit different, actually. So I've been asked quite a few times, you know, what is Joe Brown's? What's it all about? And I often say it's more of a feeling than anything else. So we worked on this. It's evolved. It's 24 years ago since we set it up now. But it's evolved over time. So I used to just describe to people, it's just a feeling. It's a strange thing to say. But now Our aim is to make people feel good. That's what we really want to do. And we everything that we do leads towards that. So, for example, it's a remarkable brand. And remarkable came from my wife being in a supermarket, somebody coming up and remarking on a dress. And we had a board meeting, and we were just waiting for it to start. And I said, a couple of people remarked on Amanda's dress in the supermarket. And Alison said, well, I was at parents' evening. Somebody remarked, two or three people remarked on my skirt, teacher being one of them. And Tracy said, well, I was in the movies. I went to see a movie the other day, and I'm putting my coat on, and somebody was looking at me in a strange way. And they were wanting to know where the coat came from. So this remarkable thing came along, this word. And I said, everything we do from now has to be remarkable. That's including if you have a problem when you ring the call center, when you come off the phone, even if you were irate when you went on the phone, when you come off, I want you to remark to the person what a lovely bloke or girl you were speaking to, and the world is okay again. And it was the same in the quality. So if you're ironing a shirt for the 20th time, I want somebody to comment that it just irons like new. So everything we do has to be remarkable.
So the Joe Brown's customer, who are they? Like, what would you describe them as? Is it quite a broad range, or is it quite a specific group of people?
I would say it's quite a broad group of people, to be honest. They're carefree, fun-loving individuals. They're not anarchists, but they're not conformists. They have their own values on life and their own outlook on life, and we encourage that. They enjoy life and they live life to the full. Quite often, I'll see somebody wearing, like, went to a Michael Kiwanuka concert on Sunday night, and there were two people in the queue wearing our product, and it just happens that I was close to them and just got chatting to them. And I said, oh, like, one of them was wearing a coat, one of them was wearing a dress, actually. I said, oh, I like your coat. It's from Joe Brown's. I said, oh, yeah, I thought it was. Yeah, I worked there. And then you get chatting with them. And they're just lovely people. You know, they're just, and it happens a lot when I see people wearing the product now. They're quite a chilled bunch as well. They're not slaves to fashion. They have their own individuality and their own outlook on things and on life. And we celebrate that, to be honest. Also, we do focus groups. And when you get a whole bunch of them, it's really, really uplifting. When you get a whole bunch of them in the room, asking them questions on development and do they like the catalogue? How do they like to communicate? We do these focus groups, which are fantastic. We'd learn a lot about them. But the one thing in common is they're all fun-loving, free-loving.
Obviously, that's one way that you understand the customer. How do you reach them? Because you've got both physical and an online presence.
Yes. Yeah, actually, we reach them in a number of ways. We distribute 58 million catalogues a year. Some of those are inserts, flyers into magazines. Some of them are mailed out catalogues, but 58 million we send out a year. We have adopted the new media, which is the bloggers and influencers. And then there's the social channels, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Pinterest. We have 300,000 people signed up to those channels. So, and we use PR as well. Obviously, we're having this chit chat. So there's different ways of reaching them, and we also have partnerships, which I'll come on to later. So it's still basically driven by paper because it's visually stimulating. Our brand's visually stimulating. So
yeah.
So it's mostly driven by paper.
Yeah, I didn't know that you still did the sort of the standard mail order concept. I thought that had been long gone. That's really good to hear, actually. I enjoy seeing like physical products in front of me, whether they're on a paper or in person.
Yeah, well, I like it because that's where we started. Again, you can create anything. If we don't like what the designers have put onto a screen, we can just change it. And I like that. That the speed of that and it is just creative. The whole company, by the very nature of what we sell and then the way that we produce the brochures, is creative. So, yeah, it works for us. A lot of people said, oh, the internet's the future. We have to embrace the internet. But for us, it was, you know, you can't throw the baby out of the bathwater, and we don't have to follow what everybody else is doing. We're very free here to come and go and do as we please.
So, can you just tell me about the sort of product categories that Joe Brown's operates in? Because you've got quite an extensive range of categories these days.
We have. Yeah, we have. It started with menswear, as I mentioned. And then after the investment came in, because after 18 months we ran out of money, when the investment came in, we started to offer ladies' wear. So it was men's and ladies. That's sort of grown over time, and within those two big categories, they've broken down into smaller ones. So there's menswear, ladieswear, and we started doing homeware and Slow Joe's, which is a loungewear, nightwear range. We were so lucky with that because we launched those just as COVID started.
Oh, well, well done.
So, well, it was just sheer luck. But sometimes you do get lucky in life, don't you? So we launched those just at the right time. It couldn't have been better. And they really helped us through COVID. Since then, they're growing and growing. I think in homeware, we'll have 350, 400 items next season. So that's doing very well. And we see that, and the Slow Joes, which is leisure wear, really. We see them as two standalone parts of our business. So that's how we develop as we go along. And we just this season started selling children's wear, kids' wear for the first time. Just T-shirts and tops, just to test it. It sounds like everything's great, but it is at the moment. So we're very happy with that, and that's something. I think there's more growth and faster growth in the homeware and the Slow Joes than there is in kids, but certainly we're not disappointed by it.
Now it's time to hear a bit more about our partners, Klarna. Klarna lets customers pay up to 30 days later or in free installments at thousands of online stores such as ASOS, River Island, Michael Kors, Made.com, and many more. Find out more at Klarna.com. So do you think the rise in the sales of things like homeware was a direct consequence of, you know, the repercussions of COVID?
I think that we were very fortunate to launch it just when COVID started. I think obviously clothing slowed down when COVID happened. A few things happened. Returns rates went through the floor. We hardly got anything sent back because people didn't want to go to the post office. I think people like our remarkable clothing, and when COVID happened, they could buy the remarkable homewares, and people were on Teams and communicating. So it's quite nice to have something remarkable. You've just commented on your lovely duvet set, and that's what we want people to do. So I think our ethos, what we stand for, just translated nicely into home, and it's continued. It's accelerated, actually. So great time to launch it, but it's doing very nicely.
Yeah. One of the things that you announced, I think it was last year, was your plans to reach an annual revenue of 100 million by 2026. So obviously that's 4 years away now. But I'm just sort of wondering, what are the things that you're doing or hoping to do to reach this?
We're developing all sides of the business. We've just built, throughout COVID, another warehouse. We thought that should see us right for 2 or 3 years. As it turns out, we're having to put a double mezzanine, two more floors into that large warehouse, which will start in about 4 months' time. And you're very welcome to come see us whenever. I know you're quite...
Oh, yeah, please. Yeah, I love a chance to go back home.
You quite fancy a day over here, so come and see us whenever. So we built this new warehouse. That's now struggling a little bit. With regard to getting to the 100 million, we're 5% above where we said we'd be at this time. Our year end finishes end of June. We're 31% up on last year. So it's not just our own business. We have our own direct business through the internet and the catalogues, but we also have some very large partnerships as well.
Yeah.
And the partners, some of the partners are growing at 120%. Now, these are guys that do millions of pounds on Joe Brown's products. People like Shop Direct, which is Very and Littlewoods, Next, Freemans and Grattan, the M. Brown Group. And then we have independents. So the independents have come back to life again. Everything died off through COVID because nobody could go out, but they've come back strongly. So the partnerships are growing. Our own business is growing nicely. And we're adding on new categories, as we said, Home and Slow Joe's, and then this boutique range as well. So we feel, and we do no export. So there's the whole of the rest of the world for us to go out too. So we feel, confident, quietly confident, I think. We feel strongly about things, and we should do, because we've built this on massive, massive stones. This business is built on massive stones. We have no debt in the business or no mortgages. So, you know, we're very free to do what we want. We sit around the table, we have a chit-chat, we decide what we're doing, we go off and do it. Sounds easy. It's never that easy. We have got some real problems with paper mills at the moment and printers going bust and, you know, costs coming in from abroad. The freight charges are crazy. Brexit, you know, it's not as easy to fill the warehouse and the call center full of people. But, you know, we get there.
You're already having to expand your plans for it, which is a great sign. But if you can, just tell me a little bit about the plan. You invested in the warehouse. Is it built or is it being built?
It's built, actually. We started, we'd had the plans, just the same as with Slow Joe's and with the Home. We started these plans before COVID ever arrived. So I remember that my wife had come back from India and the other directors wanted me to stay at home in case she brought COVID back. It was just before lockdown. And so I had to have 10 days at home just quarantining. And then COVID started, and the FD rang me and said, look, the diggers are just starting to dig up. Should we pause this? Because this COVID thing, I think, is going to be pretty serious. And I said, no, we have to progress. We've got the money to do it. We've got to progress. And everything, I'm a great believer in everything passes. So, you know, all this trouble that's going on in the world now, eventually it will pass. And history shows you that. So I said, no, let's carry on. And by the time I was very ill, actually, well, I was in bed for 12 months. Well, by the time I came back, the warehouse had been built. It was just phenomenal. So it was just we decided to do it and continued, really.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's interesting. And thank goodness you're all better now.
Yeah, it was a bit difficult.
Yeah. Well, I want to move on and ask about, obviously you've told me how your product offering has changed, but I'm just a little curious to slide this question in and ask, do you think as your product offering has changed, your customer has changed as well?
Yes, it has. It has slightly. It's a good question. The customer has also changed slightly because of the amount we do through the partnerships. So the biggest part of our business is selling direct to our own customers. There's 1.6 million of them. But the partnerships take us into different areas with different databases and different customer types. And one of the ones I'm very excited about is a smallish company called Silk Fred.
I know Silk Fred, yeah.
Yeah, we're going great guns on Silk Fred. It's much younger, more trendy, more fashion-led, but they just love our product. So, and the same with some of the independents. We deal with some quite trendy independents as well. So the customer is changing. It's becoming a little younger, which is good, because by very nature, every year your database ages 12 months unless you're recruiting younger ones. So with the modeling, the photo shoots we do, and the brochures that we put out are aimed at a slightly younger market. But it's great because the older ones are embracing it. They're loving it just as much. Nobody wants to look like they're getting old, do they? No, you're too young, Tom. But I can tell you from experience, no one wants to look like they're getting old. So, yeah, the customers are getting younger. And I wouldn't say fashion conscious, but things like crochet. We've been doing crochet. A good example is we've been doing crocheted cardigans and dresses for about 2 years. All of a sudden, crochet is a massive fashion now. So by the very nature of that, other people are picking up on it. It evolves. The great thing about any business, or I think our business in particular, is that it evolves. So you can see it evolving over a 6 month period, and it's evolved for 24 years. So
yeah,
it'll end up 100 million quite soon.
And you dabbled in answering about partnerships already. you've name dropped quite a few already as well.
I'm sorry.
No. It's great. But I just want to ask how the partnerships actually work, because you are stocked online, for example, like Next and Freeman's. But what is the relationship between you and someone who is a partner?
Well, they sell our product on their website, and they can deal with us in a variety of ways. They can wholesale the product, which means they just come in and buy 1,000 pairs of jeans and 1,000 dresses over, I don't know, however many lines, and they buy it and they can sell it. In a way, that's the best for them because some of the products sell so quickly. Another way is that our product sits on their website and it's called direct dispatch. So their customer orders from them. So, for example, I'll give you Very, because they've just had a dress that sold 794 dresses in 4 days.
Oh, wow.
And we had to stop them selling it. Actually, I say just. It was a season or so ago. But so it sits on their website. That order comes over to us. We pick it and pack it in our warehouse and send it direct to their customer. If their customer doesn't like it, it returns it direct to us. So, or actually, it goes into their stocks, and then they replan from that.
Yeah.
So that's direct dispatch, and there's another model with the larger sizes that we do. So we don't go above size 18 to our own customer, but we've licensed off the larger sizes to another company, the M Brown Group, and they have. They have enormous sales on our products. We're actually, I think, the biggest brand in their business at the moment. So that's basically how it works. We don't really mind how we trade with people. We do it to fit them. It has to be good for them. It has to be good for us. But a lot of our relationships are sort of 15 years old.
And not looking back, but almost looking a little bit forward, 2022, what's upcoming and exciting that you can tell me about? Because you've recently brought out on your website and in these partnerships your summer collection.
Yes, I find the future exciting because of the opportunities that will be there. And sometimes you can't see the opportunities; they're not existing right now, but they come to light. So we've recruited some very good people, a very good buying director through COVID because she was wanting to move on. So it's not just people. We've been offered at the moment a couple of businesses to buy. I'm not sure that we'll buy either of them, to be honest, but there's opportunities like that. And then there's partnerships abroad as well. So we are speaking to one or two huge partners in Germany at the moment. Germany's a pretty good market for direct selling. So there's also better people. I think that because we're a strong business, we can attract better people. So all the time we're recruiting. I think we're recruiting 3 or 4 different people a week now in different posts. So
that's not
counting the call center or the warehouse. So I think that for me the excitement is in the opportunities that present themselves. And as I say, we don't have to go to the bank or go to shareholders to decide if we can do something. We just have a chit chat. We make plenty of mistakes as well. I don't think it's all plain sailing, but generally we make more right decisions than wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the right decisions that I want to mention is sustainability. It says so on your website that you're pushing ahead with sustainability, because you've never been a fast fashion business anyway. But
no. No.
What does sustainability mean to the Joe Brown's brand, if anything?
Oh, no, of course it does. It's a very hot topic at the moment. We're on a journey at the moment where our swimwear is sustainable. Some of the denim is sustainable. The paper is all reprocessed paper. And the packaging, we've re-looked at all the packaging as well. So we're doing what we can at the moment. Of course, there's a lot more to do. And we're on this journey. We are looking to source closer to home as well. So the whole buying team and design team have been out in Turkey. We already deal with Turkey, but we're looking to do more because it's nearer home. Yeah. Shipping in from China and India can be it's very bad for the environment a lot of the time. So we're on a journey, and it's something that I think everybody has to embrace these days.
Yeah. But that's not something that you should reflect that you think should reflect badly on you or the brand or anything. The fact that you're trying and you're pushing ahead just step by step, it is something to be, you know, you should be congratulated on, because you can't do everything with sustainability at once. So it's just good to know that you're doing things.
That's right. And sometimes you look into something and you can miss the obvious thing, the damage it does to the environment to fly it in from the other side of the world. There's so many things that it's a real complex twist, but there are consultants that we're speaking to who can look at that and advise us that way. Because you think you might be doing something good, but in actual fact, you're not, because the power that it takes to make a certain, I don't know, polythene bag might be a load more power, although the polythene will decombust. So it's a tin of worms at the moment. And I think a lot of people are making strides, and we're one of them.
Yeah, it's a balancing act as well, and you're right.
If
I'm to finish off then and just ask specifically about the future for Joe Browns, what do you personally hope to see in the next few years? I hope so, to continue all of your bold prints, to look at new categories, to keep pushing ahead with what you're already doing.
Yes. That's a good question. I think for me, to get to the 100 million is important. And that came about because, as I think I mentioned, I was ill. Right through COVID, I was in bed for 12 months, and to be honest, I very nearly died. So after I didn't, then I looked at the situation and thought, what could I have done differently? What else? What could I have done if I get another chance? And I didn't die. So I thought, well, we'll start a £100 million business. So we'll develop it to 100 million, because we could have done all along, but I never had that inclination. All I ever wanted to do when I wrote my plan down was to make a few quid and have some fun. So we've had a load of fun, we've made a few quid, and now we can take it to another level. I have to say, the directors did the most incredible job through COVID, looking after the business and looking after the people in the business. And then I came back and said, right, I've got this plan, we're going to do 100 million. And their faces just dropped. But I think you do need a big goal to focus on. And, you know, I think it's more exciting. You attract a better person as well when you have bigger, more exciting goals. And it's not like it's not achievable. It's eminently achievable. And I just think it makes it more fun. You know, if you win the Vauxhall Conference League, then you want to win and you get promoted. You want to go up. It's just life, isn't it? It's how people are. So we had a really nice carry-on for sort of 22 years. And now we're going to see what we really can do.
I'm excited to see what you do.
I know we'll do it. The most important thing is that it's still fun. I think if we stop enjoying it, we could get to 100 million. Nobody really enjoys it. It's absolutely worthless then. So I think it has to be fun.
Yeah. Oh, well, honestly, I just want to say thank you really for giving me, you know, half an hour of your time to talk about your life, which sounds honestly so exciting. And I'm jealous of all the places you've been to. But also to tell me about the business, where it's been, how you got there, and where it's going to go in the future.
Ah, well, come and see us, Tom. We'll show you around and nip out for a bite to eat, and I'll tell you all the stuff that I haven't told you today.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Industry.Fashion's In Conversation podcast. If you ever want to be there in person, visit our website at theindustry.fashion. And sign up for our newsletter to be the first to hear about future events. Thanks for listening. Thanks again to our partners, Klarna, and keep an eye out for our next episode.